I love the singing here. And those of you who've spent a little time maybe away from areas where there are larger congregations, gone out to the frontiers, you might say, of the gospel, small churches, that's what you miss. We talked a little bit today, I guess, about second and third, fourth generation Christians, and sometimes there's some problems associated with that, but I tell you what's good about it. When you're raised among Christians, you usually learn how to sing, and this you have great singing here, and I hope you all enjoy it and appreciate it here. I was hoping I could bring you some rain from New Jersey. You know, we've been flooded up there. I didn't know I was going to bring you this much as we've had today. But I appreciate the prayer, thanking God for the rain. And I guess we've all been reading about your drought down here. And makes you appreciate the rain when you haven't had it for a while. And we can thank God for that blessing. We talk about lost generations. Peter talked about save yourself from this perverse generation. If we can ever see a lost generation round about us now, it's the young people. The young people who are teenagers now or in their early 20s. We're surrounded by young people who have no idea where they're from, no idea where they're going. They need hope. They need purpose. They need to cleanse their way. And when I say cleanse their way, you might be thinking of a text I have in mind. How can a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed according to your word. That's Psalm 119, verse 9. We're talking this week about reaching out to the lost, evangelizing, teaching others. And I want to focus tonight in particular on some keys to reaching young people and helping this lost generation find itself in Jesus Christ. I'm going to start off making a point, and it's really anecdotal, and then we're going to go into some scriptures. But the point I want to start off with is it seems like to me there's a kind of a revival going on among young people, at least in areas where I've been. I just noticed more enthusiasm, more desire to pray, more desire to study the Bible than, for example, when I was a kid, and that wasn't that long ago. I'll show you some pictures to illustrate what I'm talking about. Here's a picture of a little congregation in Upper Manhattan for their midweek services. We probably had about 25 there that Tuesday night. But you notice there's not too many kids in that picture. One or two, there's Genesis on the front and a few others. But not many. This is about 4 years ago. Now, the next picture I'm going to show is just the young people about 2 years ago. Now, you got about 25 just young people there on Tuesday night. I guess we have maybe a third more than that now. And our little congregation is filling up so much with teenagers and kids, we don't have room for them all. And we've got a second story, and we've put a screen in there, and it said chase some of them there, and you go listen to the sermon on the screen, because we don't have room for them in the auditorium. Don't know what we're going to do. We don't have any money. We got more kids than we can use. That's a great problem to have. And it's just, here's another picture. This is a couple of years ago. This is just an all-day Bible study, probably about 75 kids there from New Jersey and Pennsylvania wanting to study the Bible. And it's just not the Northeast. I don't travel as much as some, but when I went to Bowling Green last year, tons of young people, many of them taking notes. I'm from North Alabama, Athens, went back to a congregation there called Hughes Road, probably a couple of hundred brethren there, and on the front, there were all the young people listening attentively and taking notes. Also last year, went to Kingsport, Tennessee. I got a picture of this one. There's Kingsport, Tennessee, and what do I face when I get up into the pulpit? You see what I have there on the front row? A bunch of young people listening closely, asking questions, wanting to know what's going on. Now, when I was a young man at the East Side Congregation in Athens, Alabama, I tell you what we had there. All the teenagers crowded onto the back rows and kind of teased and cut up with each other and poked each other and tried to make nuisances themselves during the services. And that was kind of the way it was in a lot of places. Young people clinging to the back row. And it's not wrong to sit on the back row, especially when folks listen as well as they do here. But it was an indifferent sitting on the back row. with no desire to really learn or grow. And even in foreign countries, well, before I get to that point, now when I go back to Eastside, there's the same thing that you have here. Tons of teenagers sitting on the front and listening. Things are getting better as far as interest in the gospel among young people. And here's where I was going to say, even among foreign countries, people send me pictures. I think this is Guatemala somewhere, and I don't even know the church. Here's our young people and a group of them wanting to hear. Well, if I'm right that there's a kind of revival going on among young people, why? In the first place, the world is an uglier place now, perhaps, than it was 30, 35 years ago. And as the world becomes uglier, maybe Christians are starting to see it for the enemy that it really is. I like history a little bit. I'm nothing like Curtis on the expertise and all of that, especially Civil War. But I'm reminded of the fact in World War II, when the Nazi occupation of France was most oppressive, was when the resistance movement had more strength. In other words, the more the oppression, the more the resistance. Maybe that's going on today. We're getting more oppression from the world. And maybe young people and their parents are waking up to the fact that it's time to resist and to push back against Satan and this empty world that we live in. Also, I think we have parents taking their responsibility to teach their children more seriously. I believe that more parents, and this is anecdotal, I believe that more parents have daily Bible studies now with their children than they did 25 or 30 years ago. I believe more parents pray daily with their children now than 25 to 30 years ago. And I know it's not what it should be, and I know a lot of us think I need to do better. Well, let's do better, but I still think it's better than it was. And of course, when we see the world as an ugly place, and when we teach our children spiritual resistance, God blesses us. And I think that's why we can thankfully see a bit of a revival among young people. Now the question is, what can we do to encourage it and build it up? I would think that in the last year, two out of every three people that we've baptized in New York City and Northern New Jersey have been teenagers. What can we do to build on this? What can we do here? I was thrilled this morning to see all the young men helping serve the Lord's Supper. I'm thrilled to see probably about a third of the congregation here, young people listening intently. I don't see anybody throwing any spitballs or, you know, it's amazing. You can see everything from the pulpit, but everybody is listening so well. Let's build on it. Let's encourage. Let's use this resource we have to reach out with the gospel to other people. Now, I don't think I'm any kind of an expert on this topic. I'm more of an observer. But God has blessed me by letting me get to know some outstanding young people. Some of you may know Caleb Churchill, and some of you may know Gary Fisher. I love to watch them and how they work with the young. And through them, we have developed a large number of young leaders who have been key to this revival. But here are the points I want us to analyze tonight. First of all, do young people need special attention as far as teaching and gospel preaching is concerned? That's been a point of discussion. I want to talk about misconceptions about preaching and teaching the young. Talk about some special challenges that they face and that we're in turn going to have to face if we're going to help them. And finally, some practical steps for improving our efforts to reach the young. So let's go to the first point. Do young people need special spiritual attention as far as teaching or gospel preaching is concerned? I've heard sincere people give some reasons as to why we don't really need to pay any special attention to the young. Some people point out that in the book of Acts, you don't really see any special mention made of young people or old people. It's just people obeyed the gospel when they heard the preaching of the gospel. And that's true to a certain extent. You don't see a whole lot of emphasis in the book of Acts to old or young or whatever. Also, abuses are cited, and there are a lot of them. In many places where it's been decided to give attention to young people, what's been the result has been pretty much social clubs and recreational organizations. And that's true. However, taking that into consideration, I think there's some biblical reasons why young people need special attention as far as the gospel is concerned and as far as teaching is concerned. First of all, when I read in my Bible the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, what do I see? Teaching is designed primarily to warn young men in particular. The writer of Proverbs thought that the young needed some special attention there. Titus chapter 2. Of course, old people need attention, young people. But I just think of verses 4 through 8. Older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. And young men have some special exhortations here as well. They are to be sober-minded, in all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is as an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Those are some special instructions designed especially for young women on the first hand, and young women and young men secondarily. And of course, you have instructions for other special groups as well. The books of Titus and 1st and 2nd Timothy have instructions primarily for young evangelists. Yes, specialized teaching. 1 John chapter 2, verses 12 through 14, talks about children, talks about fathers, talks about young men. Now, these may have reference to levels of spiritual age more than physical age, but the fact is, different kinds of people need different emphasis in teaching, different points of interest. And we see that in our educational system. How would we feel if someone took our first grade child and stuck him in a 9th grade mathematics class where they're talking about Algebra 1, and he's got to sit in there, and they're all talking about Algebra 1, and the first grader knows nothing about what? We would be incensed. We're going to take our kids out of that school. And yet we see that on a spiritual level sometimes. We want our youth or our children to sink or swim as they take on material that really is not designed for them. One of the biggest tragedies I see is visiting, and this happens more in smaller congregations. There is the adult Bible class. And sitting in the adult Bible class as the teacher drones on and on and on, are your 5th graders, your 6th graders, your 7th graders completely oblivious to what's going on? What a waste of our time and resources. To say that God doesn't give special attention to the youth and to those who are older in certain contexts is to overlook these and other scriptures that we could give. So yes, young people need special spiritual attention. Well, let's go on and talk about some misconceptions about reaching young people with the gospel. The first is that church-sponsored recreation is necessary to teach them. And so we see they're called family life centers, but what they really are just recreational facilities, gymnasium, sometimes if a lot of money, a swimming pool, or other facilities designed for recreation. And you have youth ministers who sometimes are little more than recreation directors. Well, the truth of the matter is that's, in the first place, it's unbiblical. You don't see churches taught by the apostles of Jesus Christ deviating from their spiritual mission to provide recreation for young people or old people or anybody else. Early congregations that were taught by the disciples of Christ were uniquely spiritual in their focus and in their mission. But not only are we talking about something that's unscriptural, we're talking about something that's really unnecessary. You don't have to try to bribe kids with hamburgers and hot dogs and basketball teams. We need to give them a little more credit than that. The growth I've seen, just with my own eyes, over the last 3 or 4 years has come primarily through an enthusiastic promotion of Bible study. You can learn. And teens, especially those that are deeper. And most teens do have a little bit in them that seeks something deeper in life. They'll respond to it. They don't want to be treated as babies. And really, those churches that emphasize the fun and games and the hamburgers and the hot dogs and the basketball teams, the children that they think they're keeping usually have little or no spiritual interest and wander off into denominationalism or community to churches. They don't have what they really need. Here's another misconception about working with the young, that they only like light topical Bible studies. You hear something like this. Let's get something that will make the young people excited. Let's talk about how to get a boyfriend, how to get a girlfriend. That'll get them, yeah. Well, there may be some times where you need to talk about boyfriends and girlfriends and purity and things like that. But that's not what it takes to really help them. The best response I've seen is to sometimes some rather deep spiritual studies. And you can do it. You can learn. There's a young lady. The thing is, you have to be careful with this thing going out over the internet. But I don't think she'll ever know I'm talking about her. And I don't guess it hurts if she knows I'm talking about her. But a really sweet young lady from Brooklyn, really a rough part of Brooklyn. Her name is Dorca. And I love Dorca. She has become a sweet, godly young woman. And I remember hearing her one time and thinking, there's something to this Dorca. It's when they had an all-weekend study of the book of Isaiah. And Dorca went, and she came back, and, yo, Isaiah, yo. And I thought, there we go. She likes Isaiah. She's responding to a deep study of Isaiah. She can handle it. We don't give our teens enough credit, do we? They can learn deep lessons. They can learn what's in the book of Isaiah. Now, sometimes they do need some topical lessons, but not the shallow, feel-good topical lessons. We can teach them what God's church is, as opposed to some of the denominational concepts we see today. We can teach them about Bible authority, establishing Bible authority, God's grace, what that means, what it doesn't mean. How does the Holy Spirit talk to us today? Through our impulses or some kind of inner illumination or simply through the Word? They need topical studies, but I'm not talking about light, shallow studies. Good, deep topical studies. So let's erase this misconception from our minds and give some meaty lessons to our young people. Here's another misconception. That is that you somehow or another have to try to act like a teenager and dress like a teenager if you're going to have any influence on them. If you're a grandmother, you have to do your hair green or purple or something like that, or if not, they're not going to listen to you. Well, you know, if you try to talk to teenagers about things you know absolutely nothing about, it just doesn't work. I almost hate to admit some of the things that I'm going to be admitting here, but I don't know anything about Justin Bieber. I know who he is, but I don't feel I'm obligated to sit down with the teenagers and just try to find out all I can about Justin Bieber so I can talk to them about him. I think this is already passé, but I don't feel an impulse that every time I pass a Volkswagen next to teenagers, you have to punch them in the arm and say, punch buggy license or something like that. It's not necessary. And if you think you have to act that way, then they'll look upon you as an idiot, which you will be at your age. The bottom line is they will... And this, all of us who are in the older generation, they will accept us if we just show them love and that we're concerned about them and that we want to help them. And we'll give them rides to meetings, give them rides to visit other teenagers. That's till they get their driver's license. Then they do not want a ride, but that's another story. Ask them about school, but especially ask them, how's it going spiritually? Have you been reading any books in the Bible lately? Show a genuine interest and concern. That's what's necessary, not trying to dress or act like a teenager. Well, let's talk about some challenges, some special challenges they have. Something I've noticed, and I understand it, but at the same time it concerns me, is sometimes our young teens and those in their early 20s can, if they're not careful, overreact to lukewarm Christians and churches. Now I'll explain a little bit of what I'm talking about. Unfortunately, young Christians see some lukewarm Christians, some dead churches, where people are just going through the motions, making sure they get the acts in without getting the heart into the worship. And then they look and they see in the denominations around about us lively, active, sincere people who are on fire, though misguided in some ways. And what's the temptation? The temptation is to begin to say that the areas in which these sincere people are wrong don't really matter. And when I've talked to some young people about this, they say, aren't dead churches with people who understand acts of worship really worse than lively, active churches where they may misunderstand some things? They're both wrong is the bottom line. God did want to spew out those lukewarm Laodiceans from his mouth. But here's the point I try to impress with them. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It doesn't have to be sincerity and zeal or knowledge and careful with God's authority. It can and it must be both of them together. And that's what we have to emphasize with them. And that's why it's so important that those of us who are middle-aged and beyond middle-aged make sure that we are zealous and that we are fervent and that we are praying, even as we are careful with God's authority, not to go beyond what is written, to worship as God has authorized. We can show them through our example it doesn't have to be one or the other. It must be both and. Both a respect for God's authority and a zeal and an enthusiasm for his word. And may God help us with that. I think that I'm going to mention three particular areas that give them challenges and that we're going to have to be ready to face and teach them with love, not hammering with our finger pointing, but look at the scriptures at these issues. First of all, the idea that the Holy Spirit guides us apart from the word through our feelings. You know, we all have impulses. We all have feelings. And of course, in the current religious world that's influenced so much by postmodernism, those feelings are attributed to God. God put it on my heart to call you. Or the Lord put it in me to come and to visit you. Well, indirectly that may be so if it's something that we've been reading in the scriptures and we're reading the scriptures about how we need to love others and we decide to call others, then through the word God has told us to do that. But often that's not what our friends mean, and sometimes if we're not careful, that's what our young Christians can mean. They mean that God really inspired them, as it were, put it miraculous in their heart to make a call or something like that. And that's treading on some dangerous ground. And we need to have some good Bible studies and good analysis. How exactly does God speak to us? Is it simply through the word? What about our feelings? What about our impulses? What about our dreams? We need to study that with them. That's going to be a challenge for them. Another challenge is what I call entertainment aspects of worship. Clapping, applause for preachers, clapping rhythmically to the music. These come from our entertainment world. They are in the popular evangelical groups. They do not come from the scriptures. And here again, sometimes you see the enthusiasm and the zeal where you see the clapping and the applause and, of course, instruments of music. And where you don't see them, sometimes you see a lot of dead people. They don't have to be associated. You can be lively and zealous in your worship and do it just according to the pattern, with the fruit of the lips, as God has specified. But we're going to have to deal with that if we're going to help young people. And I would also mention the role of women. It's something in the scriptures that just goes against our modern politically correct age. The scriptures give a different set of instructions from that which is politically correct. We're going to have to be able to go over that issue again and again with our young people and encourage them and help them to see what the Scriptures say. May God help us to help them not to overreact to lukewarm Christians and churches. And probably the best way you can do that is not to be lukewarm ourselves and not to be dead ourselves. Here's something else that's a special challenge. Worldly entertainment and dress. I think there's no time when we've been so inundated with worldliness through so many different media. Used to be, just have to worry about, well, you didn't even have to worry about this, but TV and radio. And now, of course, it's the computers, the iPods, everything that bombards us with worldly concepts. But here I think we need to make an important distinction between what might be distasteful to us and what might be relatively innocent. And here again, I hate to confess some things about me. I know you're going to think I'm 100% nerd with absolutely no life in me. But I'll just talk about my taste in music. I like classical music. I admitted it. And maybe I could take some occasional 60s and 70s pop, or maybe a little instrumental bluegrass and some instrumental jazz or something like that. That's my taste, and I know it's really old-fashioned. But here comes my daughters, and they like the popular music. And sometimes I ask myself, do they really like that stuff? I don't really think they like it. They just say they like it so they can look cool around about with their friends, and they tell me, no, we really like it. Okay. I remember Rebecca, who's our oldest daughter, and we're listening to some of the stuff she's listening to, and here's a song, and I guess this goes back to the 90s, if you remember 90s music. Something about, if you want to destroy my sweater, go ahead and destroy my sweater. What are you listening to, Rebecca? Well, that sounds ungodly to me. I remember going and talking with Brother Dale Smelser. Dale is a good man. He's been in the Northeast for many years. I said, Dale, what can we do about this music that our kids are listening to? Destroy my sweater. And Dale gave me, I think, what was some good advice. He said, Gardner, there's so many things that are evil. If it's something that's just a matter of taste and not evil, don't prohibit it. Instead, encourage your girls to analyze what they're listening to and make some distinction. And maybe you're not going to listen to every piece of music. You're going to use judgment to accept and reject. But don't just go ahead and prohibit it outright because you don't like it. So I let Rebecca continue to listen to not destroying her sweater. But it was a matter of taste and not a matter of sin. But having said that, there's so much that goes beyond taste and does get into the realm of evil concepts and evil surmising, what is suggestive. And I've enjoyed Facebook. If you don't know what that is, don't worry about it. Maybe it's best that you not know. But it gives me an opportunity to contact friends and especially a lot of the young people. And I'll just frankly tell you, it grieves me. It grieves me to see what some of the young Christians wear, what they wear to the beach, the groups that they say that they like on their page, which are really ungodly groups, and it goes beyond a matter of taste. And it hurts me. And yet, I suppose all of that has always existed. It's just there on this little social network. It's there for everybody to see. How do we deal with it? Teaching more than preaching, showing verses, asking questions, and those that are good will respond well. And they may not always get it instantly. And yet if you see improvement, that's a time for rejoicing. Some of these young teens that we've been working with in Manhattan and the Bronx, when they've been baptized, I've just almost, when I see them come in with those tight pants and tight shirts on, and yet we've tried to teach them. And you know what? After a year or two, they're not quite as tight. They're not quite as low cut. Still maybe not what I would like in every way, but what's happening? Things are going up. Things are getting better. And I think God is merciful with us as we're growing and as we're getting better. Now, if sometimes I know of some Christians who should know better, if they wore the same things, I'd be very disappointed. That would mean that they were going down spiritually. But may God give us strength and wisdom as we try to help young Christians, especially those who've come out of the world with absolutely no parental type of upbringing as they deal with the worldly entertainment and their dress. Well, I want us to go to our last point. How can we be more effective in preaching the gospel to our young people and teaching them? How can we have more, especially from the world, come to seek Jesus Christ? Well, I'm going to talk about a few steps. First of all, of course, is prayer. We've talked about that a lot this morning and now tonight. There at the little congregation in Sherman Avenue, the picture I showed before was just after we'd had a division and we'd lost about a third of our members to some wild doctrine that came on the scene. And in New York City, it's hard to keep that stuff out. But we decided then that we would pray to God to help us to find more young people, and we did. Now, I don't think that God zapped us with a bunch of young people, but what happens? As you pray, especially for a spiritual purpose, God allows our will, that's the way our will becomes one with God. And through the influence of His Word, He helped us see principles that would help us to reach out to the young more effectively. That's a first step anywhere in trying to help the young. Training our own children. Many of our effective young leaders, maybe even we could say most, have been trained by godly parents. They've been brought up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord with the daily prayer and the Bible study. And here's the most important thing. When God is the absolute ruling factor in their parents' lives. Now, don't misunderstand me as I make this point. There's nothing wrong with sports. I like sports. I like to watch a good football game. Nothing wrong with playing sports. I tried to play a little bit in high school with a little school, and that made it a little easier to play. There's nothing wrong with academics. We need to encourage our children in that way. There's nothing wrong with after-school activities. But let me tell you something. Our kids can tell if those things are really more important in our minds than spiritual growth. They can tell by your enthusiasm. Straight A's, lots of enthusiasm. Winning a spiritual battle, maybe a little less enthusiasm. A conflict between what is academic or social and what is spiritual and what wins. I tell you, if the social or academic or recreational wins the priority race with a spiritual thing, that's not the way to do it. That's going to cause us problems. We can train our children by teaching them, by showing them that God is everything. We can teach our children to evangelize. Our 6 and 7 and 8 year olds have friends at school. Let's have your little friends over to play, and maybe not just to play. After you play, let's have them over to read a Bible story and to study with them. That works. Maybe you need to let the parents know. Could little Johnny come over? We're going to play and have a Bible study. That works. That gets your children involved in thinking of reaching out to their companions. And let me tell you, those 6 and 7 and 8 year olds, it won't be any time before they're 15 and 16, and they're inviting their 15 and 16 year olds to Bible studies, and they'll do it. They'll come. And you have a good Bible teacher teaching them the Bible. 15 and 16. But when does it start? It can start when they're 6 and 7. So the priority, of course, is teaching them in the home. But here in the local congregation as well, the best teachers need to be for the children. This is my opinion. The children and teenagers. The very best you can for them. That's the age at which they are forming and molding their thoughts. That's when they really need it. Here's something else that's a key to evangelizing the young: promoting good leadership. Paul told Timothy to take what he had learned and teach it to other men. And that word men just doesn't mean males. It means other people. Women are included in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2. Teach them so that they may in turn teach others. Seems like in my experience, there's 1 in every 10 young Christians is a good leader. one in every 25 young Christians is a fantastic leader. And maybe one in 1,000 is just one that you just need to really cherish. It's just, he's going to be able to influence hundreds of other young people. Timothy and Titus in the Bible would have been among the best. But such leaders will stand out. I am confident that you have here in this congregation some young men and young women who are spiritually minded and who can be leaders and encourage others to be spiritually minded. Treasure them, work with them, give them all the resources you can give them. There's a little window, it seems like, between about 16 years of age and 25 years of age, where a young person can exert influence that's so much more than at any other time in their lives. Here's the thing. Take a 17-year-old Christian. A 10 or 11-year-old kid will do anything a 17-year-old tells him to do. Now, we know that turns out bad sometimes. 17-year-old can tell a 10-year-old to do something nasty, and the 10-year-old will do it. But it works the other way. A 17-year-old Christian can ask a 10-year-old, will you study the Bible with me? What 10-year-old would turn that invitation down? Yes, I'll study with you. Get a few of your friends and let's have a Bible study. That's a period in his life. Or a 20-year-old will ask a 16-year-old or a group of 16-year-olds, let's have a Bible study. They'll respond positively to that. Now, what we need to do is encourage our 16, 17-year-olds to take the time to deal with those 10-year-olds and those 8-year-olds. And I know it takes a leader, it takes a mature leader, because what do most 16 and 17-year-olds think? It's not cool to deal with kids, and I want to be real cool with all these members of the opposite sex. That's what interests them. But the mature ones, the mature Christians among them can see, yes, I can help these 10 and 11-year-olds. God wants me to help them. And they can become leaders among those, especially among those who are a little bit younger than they are. May God help us. Now, you've got a good bunch of teens listening to me now. I don't see one of them asleep. Take my challenge. I'm giving you a challenge now. Look at some younger kids. What can you do to have some Bible studies with them? Just, you don't have to be an expert teacher. Just read a chapter. Talk about it. You can be amazed about how much good you can do for God if you'll step out of your comfort zone and work to do that a little bit. Something else we need to do is to give them time together. Rebecca, our oldest daughter, was about 15 years old. And we're talking in New Jersey when there were less Christians there then than there are now. And I told Beverly, Rebecca has no Christian friends. And when she was 15, she really didn't. The congregation there in Washington, New Jersey, had none her age. Fortunately, Lee, our youngest daughter, had a bunch of friends. But Rebecca, at her age group, had none. We decided we probably should have done something earlier about this. We decided we had to do something about that. And we said, you are going with us to this gathering of Christians in the Chicago area. Oh, they didn't like the idea. Complained about us dragging them off to a concentration camp and they weren't going, but we drug them with us. And of course, it was good for them to be with other young Christians when we were there. Parents, let's get our young people, let's get our little kids together with other young people and other little kids. They need each other. It's an evil world out there, and it's encouragement for them to see that others are going through the same things that they are going through. Recruit some of these young teenagers here and early 20s to help you in the process. If you go to a meeting, a gospel meeting, within about 150 miles of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, you're going to see Art and Lori Dreger, and there are about 7 or 8 kids. When you don't know exactly how many there are a lot. But what do? That's just a part of their life as a family, to go to gospel meetings in the area. Everybody knows them. They've made sure that they've got their children together with other Christians. You may think it's easy here in a large congregation. You have to make the steps yourself. A couple of other quick points. Emphasize application in Bible study. As you start studying with them, or as you continue study with them, have them see that the Bible is not a theoretical book. It's a book of application. It's practical. Help them to learn to mine the Scriptures. Get them enthusiastic about that. And recruit your leaders to emphasize that fact as well. Confide your own challenges in them. There's an evangelist who, to me, is an amazing man. His ability to work, especially with young men, and get them to confide their spiritual challenges and allow him to help them with those challenges. And I asked him, how do you do it? And he said, well, I just kind of let them know that I have some challenges of my own and ask them to pray for me as I deal with my own challenges. Sometimes as adults, we like to present ourselves to our teens and young people. We've got it all together in every way. But the bottom line is we all have our challenges. We all have our spiritual challenges. And when we talk to our teens and young, we don't need to act like, you have the challenges, I've got it all together. I think it can be helpful to let them know, I want to try to pray with you as you deal with your challenges. Now you please pray for me as I have my own. That's something that can help us to gain their confidence and allow us to teach them to allow the word to penetrate them. You know, dying congregations are a sad thing to see. And once it seems like congregations start down the slope, start heading downhill, it's so hard to reverse it. But the two things that a dying congregation has in common, no young people and no enthusiasm. May God help us and give us the wisdom to develop leaders among our young people and our children so they can be salty and influence others, not just here, but in their schools and social circumstances, so they can reach out to others with the gospel of Christ, the saving gospel, which gives hope, not just on this earth, but gives eternal hope. Do you have that hope? Now we're all young at heart here, I know. Do you have that hope? The hope of salvation. Do you know where you're from? Do you know where you're going? The answer to those questions are right here. And there, here we have revealed Jesus Christ, his love for us, his death on the cross for our sins, his grace extended to us. And he asked us, in turn, to reach out and accept his grace. Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. Anyone tonight believe in Jesus? Would like help in being baptized in him for remission of sins? We can help you with that. Or if we can help anyone else in any other way with prayers, let us know what we can do to encourage you and help you. Let's stand now and sing the final song.